Today is the 12th of May. I'm talking to Mary Blood about RAF Curtin Lindsay. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
Could I start off by asking what date you were at Curtin and Lindsay, and what was your role there?
Well, it was between either the end of 42 or the beginning of 1943. And I was a junior NCO in charge of the Airman's Mess, running rotors, fixing, being there at meal times and making sure the place was clean before meal times and the normal.
And you were a member of permanent staff there, weren't you? Weren't associated with a certain squadron or group?
Oh, yes. It was 12 group. Yeah, 12 group RAF.
Oh, right. Brilliant.
Which came across the middle of the country. It was, you know, the RAF is divided into commands and whatnot, and then you come into groups. Of course, you get to stations and so on.
Excuse me. So, we've got here on your notes that you're a number 53 OTU arriving at Curtin.
Oh, yes, but before that it was, it had been an operational fighter station. And the squadrons used to come from RAF Coastal, which is only 8 miles from the coast on the first line of defence. And then the squadrons used to come after 6 weeks. And Curtin was the second line, so they were supposed to get a rest here.
Right.
And then they went back again. They went back, you see. So that was before, towards the end of the war, it became a training station, in which case 53 OTU. And finally, other types of training. The flight sergeant in the mess took a field kitchen course, and the RAF regiment came and trained at Curtin, so that's what it became towards the end.
What were your main memories of Curtin during wartime?
Well, it's very difficult. I mean, there's so rare. I mean, we didn't get a great deal of bombing at Curtin. We had had at Coltishall, but at Curtin, no. So it was just your normal sort of job, and you got 48 hours leave. I came home to Lincoln because that's where my family were, and we obviously any dancing, and dancing was the main thing we did in our spare time, and we had a camp cinema, and we had the same seats twice a week. They changed the projection on for Monday to Wednesday, and then again they changed on Thursday morning. You had Thursday, Friday, Saturday, another film. And then you had, of course, the various entourages and various visiting. And we had our own camp dances, we had our own camp orchestra, and our own camp people who were in amateur dramatics, had their own concert party, and so you made your own entertainment, because basically the stations were stuck in the middle of nowhere, sort of thing. So it was just really by then, and then of course it came on group notes that we could, the WAFs could now apply to go overseas. Well, I was quite comfortable here, but thought it sounded a bit of a change. We'd never been overseas and such like. So I then had to have an interview with a group officer who came, and she said, "Well, we can't send anybody, you know. You will be an ambassador for the country." The only time I've ever been told that in my life. But and then I, after Christmas, I got my things, and I went. I was posted on 7 days embarkation leave, and I was posted eventually to Brussels, and then I looked to Bucky Burke in Northern Germany.
Wow, what did you do when you were in Brussels?
Pardon?
What did you do when you were in Brussels?
Well, in Brussels, before, when after D-Day, when everybody had moved, everything that anybody wanted on the continent had to be flown, which became an impossible thing to do. So once they cleared Amsterdam and were able to clear the harbour, they could get boats in. And then you could, so we were open as what they called an air publication distribution unit. And we were part of 2nd Tactical Headquarters, 2nd Tactical Air Force. And we then were able to issue all the forms and everything to everybody in Northern Europe, which of course made life easier. And also, in 1945, when they we had the election, the first election anybody had had for years, and we were either given, we were able to give somebody a proxy vote, or you could have a postal vote, and we sent out all the voting papers and everything to all the RAF personnel in Northern Europe.
That must have been a big job.
Oh, well, I mean, sometimes you work late, sometimes you... And of course, Brussels was a lead centre, so that was, could be quite fun. So, I mean, after all, it was only 18 to 23, so that you did what to... Except, of course, you didn't get drunk like you do now, because otherwise you'd have been out of charge. But never mind. So, I mean, we just... You definitely played hard, you worked hard, and you saw the best of people and you saw the worst of people, so...
How long did you spend in Europe?
I was there from February, and then I was demobbed in October.
Oh, right.
And while I was there, I met my future husband.
Oh.
I was working late. And I went to the tram stop at the end, and he just arrived in Brussels and come up through the desert up into the crossing of Brussels. And he went to a dance, and there was not many ladies there, and his mates hadn't gone with him. So he came and he had to change at my tram stop. And he said afterwards, I wouldn't have wondered, I thought, if that wife speaks English and the rest is history.
What was he? Was he an airman or...?
He was in the 8th Army.
Oh, right.
He was a Royal Army Service Corps, but he had been attached to the... Desert Rats, 7th Army Division.
And what did you do when you came back home?
Well, basically, we got married. So we came and came home and we arranged the wedding and got houses and tried to furnish like everybody else.
Was after the war, was the country quite different? You know, different.
Oh,
was
yes.
There lots to recover?
Well, I think we were different. You see, the Churchill lost heavily, but he lost heavily partly through the service road, but because he said, "Oh, we'll put the country back to what it was." Well, of course, we changed. We didn't want the country back to what it was. You see, before the war, people of my age, you went in service and that was it. Well, we were determined if anybody was going to ring a bell, we were going to be the one that rang it. We didn't answer it. I'm afraid we all came out a little bit bolshy, you know.
But well, it would have changed you, wouldn't it, as an experience?
Well, I mean, you'd met people from the highest to the lowest, and you'd realise that they were no different to you. What they could do, you'd done, and in many places during the war, you'd taken on quite a lot of responsibility, even though you were quite young. I mean, on one occasion, I flew during the war. I flew in the old Dakotas from Croydon to Evere, which was Bosworth. And I came home 48 hour leaves, and I had to go and pick up some papers, which were basically whoever wants, ration cards, which would have been made a bomb on the back market. And I had to stay overnight before we could catch a plane back, and I went in and said, could I leave some official papers? And he said, good God, what are you doing with that lot? Which I said, showed the authorisation. But, I mean, I was only 22, and I had 50,000 railway warrants and 50,000 of which I was responsible for. You see, so you did some odd things in your time, but I mean, they always say, well, we struggle through, don't we? You know, I mean, there was nothing really well organised. Some parts were shambles, like they still are.
Billy, well, thank you very much for talking to me, and thank you for sharing your memories.